Parshas Truma will open up the Chumashim. The Parsha begins in Perek Chaf Hei of Sefer Shmos. And of course we're collecting for the Mishkan. And this is going to be the topic for the balance of Sefer Shmos, the second half of which obviously addresses the Mishkan and the Kelim in the Mishkan. We're going to focus today on one of the particular Kelim, and you'll take a look on page 190. And the Torah commands us the Asu Aron, etc., that we have to make an Aron. We'll soon see that this word, the Asu, and they shall make an Aron, is a very unique word in context, because with regard to each one of the other parts of the Mishkan, every other keli, it says the asisa. Here it says the asu in the plural. And then the Torah tells us in pasuk yud aleph v'tzipisa oso zav. Now this layer of gold has to be number one on the outside of the aron, number two on the inside. That's called mibayis umibechur umichutz titzapenu. And that's going to be a very important idea for this topic of the Aron and its meaning for us today. Then if you fast forward a little bit to Perek Chaf Hei, in this case Pasuk Tes Zayin, which you'll see on the top of page 191, we have a Seder, a sequence, because as you know the Aron housed the Luchos, which are called the Eidus in the Lashon of the Torah, and the question is, what's the Seder? And the reason for this question, as we'll soon see, is because the Torah talks about this Seder not once, but twice. So for example, if we take a look in Pasuk Tesvav, which is on the top of your page, it says B'tabozar, and it says, that's the Tabos. So we'll get to that in just a minute. But with regard to the Aron and the Eidus, the Torah says in Pasuk Tezayin, V'nasata es ha'aron, and then it says, Es ha'eidus asher etein eilecha. And then if you fast forward a little bit to Pasuk Chaf Aleph, it says again, at the end of that pasuk, the El Aron Titein Esa Eidus. So the question is, in both cases, Tetzayin and Chaf Al, the Torah is repeating itself, telling us that the Eidus, which means the Luchos, have to be placed into the Aron. Why the repetition? And interesting is, in between, if we bracket Pesukim Tetzayin and Chaf Aleph, what we have in the middle there is the story about the Kruvim. Now please also notice, and this is going to also be a big deal about the Aron, is that the Shiurim, the sizes, are very important. If you look back to Pasuk Yud, it's always going to be Amasayim V'chetzi, or Ama V'chetzi. We're going to talk about the Rochav, we're going to talk about the Orech, the Koma is also Ama V'chetzi. Always adding a chetzi, and you could always say that it was just a technicality, but maybe it's not coincidental that the Torah wants that extra chetzi, that extra half in each case. And finally, with regard to the badim, which you'll see is a whole unit of psukim that begins with pasuk yud gimel, pasuk yud dalid, again in pasuk tesvav. The badim are these loops that hold the long poles that get carry the aron, yeah. Stakes. Yeah, and then it says at the end of pasuk tesvav lo yasuru mimen, and the badim should always be there. You know, you shouldn't take them off. You would think that maybe if the aron is in a resting state, you know, we don't need the badim there. The badim are there to facilitate the carrying of the aron. The transportation of the aron, but here it's not. No, the Torah says lo yasuru mimen. So again, if we just want to introduce our topic for today, and that is the aron, why all these on a philosophical level, perhaps, or a hashkafic level, what are the messages here maybe the subliminal below the surface messages of, number one, the Asu Aron, which means the Aron is in plural. Everyone has to be part of this creation of the Aron. It's not just addressed to Moshe Rabbeinu as an individual, Asisa, as in the case of the other Kalim. Why the Midos of the Aron are always Chatzi? What's the significance of the Chatzi? What's the significance of the fact that the Aron has to be layered both on the outside and on the inside with Zahav? Why the repetition of the fact that the Edus, which means the Luchos, have to be placed inside the Aron? Why did the Torah see fit to wedge between this repetition the story about the Kruvim? What in general are the Kruvim? What do they symbolize? What message can we take from the Kruvim? And the Badim, why the Badim constantly, on a continuous basis, Lo Yasur Mimenu, have to be attached to the Aron? So what we have here on these pages that I gave you is a discussion that begins with a statement of Rava deep into Masechta Yoma. And Rava is trying to derive some sort of symbolic meaning to Mibayis Umichutz Titzapenu, from the outside and the inside, which sounds like the inside has to be very similar to the outside, and what you see on the outside is not just on the outside, but it's also on the inside. Now Rava sees in this consistency between the outside and the inside a fundamental statement about Torah, about the study of Torah, about a scholar of Torah. And the reason for that is obvious, because the Aron, which houses the Luchos, is really the symbol of Torah. Omar Rava called Talmud Chacham She'ein Tocho Kibaro. If what you see on the outside is not what it's like on the inside, you know, sometimes they say what you see is what you get, but here it's got to be more than that. It's not just what you see on the outside. The external manifestation, the superficial externalities, is not indicative of a true Torah scholar. You see, Torah, as you and I know very well, we've discussed in the past, it's not just some sort of intellectual study where my knowledge and myself are two separate entities. You know, as Aristotle said, I'm not a triangle, even though I study the triangle. But in the case of Torah, I am Torah. You know, that's the goal, that's the ideal. And therefore the Gemara says that the Torah has to have an impact on the personality of the Torah student. It has to transform him. If you're interested in the Brisker terminology, we would say in Brisk, the Torah itself is Mekadesh Es Hagavra. It sort of changes the personality. There are many dinim that apply to a Talmud Chacham, both in terms of our responsibility vis-a-vis the Talmud Chacham, that's called Moreh Talmid Chacham, and also the Talmud Chacham himself has to behave a certain way. And that's what I think is the subject of this analysis of Rava, that the Talmud Chacham has to change, you know, the Torah has to change his whole personality. And therefore the Aron, which represents Torah, is going to be both on the outside, Mitzupasov, and also on the inside, Bibayis Umibachutz. And the reason for that is that the Talmud Chacham has to be sincere. He's got to be exactly on the inside what he is on the outside. Now, just on the side, I want to mention there's a very profound controversy about education, about Torah education, in terms of who we should allow in to the Beis Medrash, to the yeshiva, to study Torah. A very profound controversy that rages even in our time. And there are some yeshivot, for example, that take pride in the fact that we won't let just anyone into our academy. You know, you have to have the credentials. You have to be on the highest level. If I would give a 20th century example of that, they say that Rav Meir Shapiro, who is the founder of, you know, the Daf Yomi, he had a yeshiva called Chachmei Lublin. I don't know if you ever heard of it. You can actually visit it today. You won't see too many yeshiva guys. You'll see a lot of nurses who are studying, or nurses to be. You know, it's now a nursing school for the Polish. And the entrance exam for this yeshiva was like you had to know half a shas. You know, the yeshiva actually only existed 9 years until the Nazis came. but you couldn't just get in. And there are yeshivot today who really have this, you know, they take pride in the fact that their standards for acceptance are very, very high. Mm-hmm. Some yeshivot will say, you know, that you're sort of like a not, lahavdil, a not Jew comes to me, this guy, you know, we convince him it's not worth it for him. You know, some yeshivas, when you come to apply, they'll try to convince you, don't even bother applying, you know, because unless you're in the top echelon, then this is not for you. And this battle goes on today because there are other yeshivot who say, no, we should lower the standards of acceptance so that we can reach out to a larger audience and hope that the Torah itself will have the impact on the person and elevate this person. So this machlokas, which as I say goes on today, is an ancient machlokas. Actually dates back to the time from Gamliel and Rav Blaz Ben Azariah. And Rav Gamliel didn't want to let any student into the Beis Medrash unless he was Tocho Kibaro, unless he was actually a personification of Rav's ideal. And his inside was like his outside. But if he was just, you know, wearing the garb, you know, he wore the black hat, but inside he wasn't exactly dedicated to the ethical standards of the Torah, then Rav Gamliel said, you know, check. Don't even bother applying to our yeshiva. You'll find yourself a different place. And this created a whole controversy. At the end of the day, Rav Gamliel was actually, he was the Nasi at that time, was deposed, and the Gemara says he was replaced by Rav Blaz Ben Azariah. And the very day that Rav Blaz Ben Azariah was appointed as the replacement, they had to add 400 safsalim to the Beis Medrash. And they, you know, it was like the floodgates were open and anybody could study Torah. Truth is that this goes back even to the earlier time period between Shammai and Hillel, when they also had a controversy about who could enter into the Torah study. But no doubt about it that everyone agrees that the goal and the ideal is what we call Tocho Kibaro, that a person's inside has to be a reflection of what he is on the outside. It's not just enough externally. He's got to be a true, genuine Talmud Chacham, which means he's dedicated to all the laws of ethics, of Bein Adam L'Chavero, of being an outstanding, you know, an outstanding personality, and a what we call a degev. You know, he's an example for others to follow. That's really what the ideal Talmud Chacham is all about, and that's why the Gemara says that when a Talmud Chacham enters into a room, you know, the aura, the whole atmosphere of the room changes, because the level and the standard that he represents and the sanctity that he represents just has a ripple effect throughout the whole room. And the more you rub shoulders with the Talmud Chacham, the greater you become as a person. The Gemara says that expresses itself in so many different ways, whether you should enter into a business transaction with the Talmud Chacham, pragmatia, whether you should marry off your daughter to a Talmud Chacham. And it goes on and on and on. You know, that's what we call his chavrus im a Talmud Chacham, to be mechubar, to be connected to a Talmud Chacham. Now it's interesting that who is really designated or invited to participate in this glorious, majestic endeavor to study Torah. And the Medrash says that why did Hashem change the language here from the Asisa, which is classical throughout the second half of Sefer Shmos, to the Asu, with regard to the Aron. Why was the Aron singled out as the Asu?
He said the Bikdash was. Asu the Bikdash.
Yeah, the Asu, right. Correct, but we're talking about Caleb now. In terms of the Caleb, there's only one Kli where it says the Asu, and that Kli is the Aron. And the reason is, says the Medrash, is because Kulan Shavimbo, which means everybody has a shot, an equal shot, at Torah study. I would like to quote to you at this point the Rambam's language in Hilchos Talmud Torah. The Rambam makes a big deal about this. You know, to him, it's just a fundamental principle. This is Perek Gimel Hilchos Talmud Torah. The Rambam says, "B'shlosha k'sarim nichturu Yisrael." The Jewish people were crowned with, as it were, three different crowns: Keser Torah, Keser Kehuna, and Keser Malchus. Says the Rambam, who acquires these three crowns? He says, Keser Kehuna, Zocheh bo Aron. And v'hoysa lo l'zaro Akrav. You know, if you're not born into Kehuna, you just don't have a shot at it. Then he gets the Keser Malchus, Zochabo David, and he says, Vizaro Liolam. So if you're not part of the lineage of David, you don't have a shot at Malchus. But when he gets the Keser Torah, the Rambam goes out of his way to emphasize, Hare Munach, the Omeid, Umuchan Lakol. I think the Rambam is borrowing a phrase from Hefker. Hefker means when you put something in the middle of a public area and you say, Kolakom Zok, anyone who wants to take it, take it. And the Rambam says about the Torah is Hefker, it doesn't belong to anyone. No one could claim, well, I inherited it from my father, from my grandfather, a person, I have a friend who claims that he's 36 generations of Rabbanim, 36 unbroken chain. But even so, that doesn't give him any claim to Torah more than I have a claim to Torah. I don't know how many generations I haven't counted, but I can only go back 2 generations, and that's it. But in any event, so he says the following, Torah tzivolot of Moshe, Morasha, Kehilas Yaakov. So Torah is the inheritance of the entire community. The Rambam re-emphasizes it. Kol Misha Yirtzeh Yavo V'yitol. And then the Rambam says, well, okay, fine. You know, if Keset Torah is Hefker and anyone can take it, it must be a cheaper deal. You know, the more something is unique and singular and limited in the number of people who can take it, then the more expensive it is. But here it's Hefker, anybody can take it. Shema Tomer, says the Rambam, I know what you're thinking, the Rambam says, I can read your mind. Sha'osan haksarim gdola mikeset Torah. For sure, kahuna malchus supersedes Torah. Oh no. The Rambam quotes a pasuk. Again, you could probably spend an hour trying to figure out what the Rambam derives from this pasuk. And then he says, holamadita, what you learn from this pasuk is that keset Torah gadol, it's even greater mikeset kahuna, the keset malchus, and therefore mukachomim mamzer, who has no yichus, he's not shaykh to kahuna, he's not shaykh to malchus, and yet if he's a talmud chacham u'kodem, he comes first l'kohen gadol melech hamaretz. He comes first to everybody, and that's the superior status of Torah. So I think all this is symbolized by the viasu, which the Medrash interprets shekulam shavim bo. My Rebbe Yisrael Rafi used to say that on Simchas Torah we have hakafos. Why hakafos? So he saw a symbolic message in hakafos. Hakafos is like a circle, like a wheel, and every wheel has a hub to it. And what's unique about a wheel or a circle is that all points are equidistant from the hub. So he says we do the hakafos around the Torah is the hub, to illustrate that every person has that equidistant shot at the Torah, if he only is willing to put the effort in. You know, it's there, it's hefker, and anyone could come. So that's the idea, that the entire Klal Yisrael are equal partners, not only in all the Kelim of the Mishkan, but specifically in the Aron, in the building of the Aron. And that's because Torah is the Nachla, is the inheritance of the entire nation of Israel. And therefore, when we speak about Torah mitzvahs, certain mitzvahs are given to only particular, you know, a certain cut of the population, a certain profile. For example, if you're not a membership of Kahuna, then you're excluded from many of the mitzvahs of the Torah, because those mitzvahs are given specifically to Kohen. There are mitzvahs that apply to men and not to women, to women that apply but not to men. When it comes to Limud Torah is given to everyone, although women are not obligated in Torah, but they have also a connection to Torah study. And the Rambam goes out of his way here at the end of this chapter to tell us that although a woman is exempt from the Torah study, if she goes ahead and she optional, you know, on her own option, if she decides to study Torah, then the Rambam says that she'll get schar for the study of Torah. Because a woman has what's called a kiyum Talmud Torah, not a chiyum, but a kiyum Talmud Torah.
Even if it's Torah Shabbat Peh.
The Rambam doesn't differentiate between Torah Shebuksav and Torah Shebalpeh. The Rambam seems to imply that in Torah Shebuksav she may have even an obligation to study Torah Shebuksav. And that's why the mitzvah of Hakel, in a certain sense, is representative of Torah, because Hakel applies to men, women, and children. And children play a major role in the study of Torah. The Rambam dedicates an entire chapter to the concept of Tinoko Shel Beis Rabban, and all the takanas that were made to guarantee that we teach Torah to the children. Mm-hmm. Then we go on and we see something even more important. And that is, as we mentioned before, that you cannot come into a Torah study situation and say, well, I got a badge. I have the Phi Beta Kappa because my father was a great scholar. My grandfather was a great scholar. There's no yuchsin over here. You can't be a miyuchas here and claim Torah. In fact, the Gemara says at one point it seems like the greatest Talmid Chacham come from Amei Aretz, not from the necessarily the Torah scholars. You also find, for example, even today, that many sons of rabbis do not go into the rabbinate. Because somehow, you know, being raised in that very intense environment, maybe you want to take life easy and go off the way. But sometimes you have a case of a young man whose father is not necessarily a great scholar dedicated to the study of Torah. Dafke, he wants to study Torah. This is happening today by the droves. It's not an uncommon phenomenon. Then he writes the fact that the midos, you know, the measurements of the Aron, for the building of the Aron, whether it's the height, the width, the length, it's all chatzi. And this has a very important message. The Baal HaTurim is famous for saying this, that a person who builds himself up and he thinks, you know, I'm shalem, you know, I have shleimut, I'm an independent scholar, I don't need anybody else, he's going to fall when it comes to Torah. The Torah and Magus Libo are antithetical. Magus Libo means somebody who builds himself up and he thinks that he's got the, you know, the monopoly of Torah. He says, on the contrary, he says a person who's nishbar, you know, he's broken into two halves, so to speak, he realizes that he alone is not capable of really understanding the Torah. He needs the help of others. You know, in many intellectual disciplines, Lahavdil, you know, the more you're independent, the greater you are. You know, that's not how it works in Torah study. In Torah study, it's Ochev Ruso Mesusa. You know, you have to learn with others. And he says that this Midah, the fact that all the Midos of the Aron are broken, that's indicative, symbolic of Shivron Lev, of someone who realizes that I just can't do it on my own. You know, throw me a rope. I'm drowning. And of course, the Gemara tells us, Mikol Malumda Yiskalti, that this is even more true, even though this is sort of, in a sense, counterintuitive, that it's even more appropriate for a teacher of Torah to be dependent upon the health of the help of his students. He needs their help desperately. And not only to do the act of teaching, but also to sharpen his understanding. You know, very often you learn a sugya, and if you don't teach it, it goes through one ear, comes out the other, or you fool yourself into some superficial understanding, then you teach it, and in that group effort, all of a sudden, the Torah's mechudedes, it becomes sharp. It becomes understood on a much deeper level. The Gemara tells us that wherever you see mayim, water in Tanakh, it's always symbolic of Torah. Why is Torah compared to mayim? What's the analogy? And the Gemara in Tainis says that water by its very nature always goes, travels, so to speak, from high places down to low places. And in order to be Mekayim Torah, in other words, to achieve and acquire Torah in a permanent way, you need to be like Mayim, and you have to always be willing to go from the high places down to the low places. But if you're so, you know, full of yourself and so bloated that you're only interested in being alone up there on top, then you have no place for Torah. Torah is antithetical to you. And it's interesting, again, if I can quote the Rambam, who usually is dedicated to more strict halacha, but when it comes to Talmud Torah, the Rambam waxes very dramatic. And he says, Divrei Torah, this is Perek Gimel Halacha Tes, Nimshalu Kimayim, why? Have you called Samil Kulamayim? Lomar Lacha. He says that, what is the symbol of Mayim? He says that Mayim is always on the move down. He says, "Ein divrei Torah nimtzon begase aruach, velo belev kol gova lev, el bedake ushfal ruach, shemis avek ba'far ragli talmid chachom." The Rambam wants to see a person who's willing to run for the sake of Torah. You know, they tell the story, I'm sure you've heard it, of a great Rosh Hashim who came to a town and he was looking for a shidduch for his daughter. And he came into the Beis Medrash, he asked the Kasha, and the Talmidim were trying to come up with an answer. And you know, the Rosh Hashiva thought, you know, whoever comes up with the answer, he's going to get my daughter in marriage. So they were racking their brains, and every answer that was suggested, the Rosh Hashiva just completely smashed it. And he was very despondent. He left the city without a future chassan for his daughter. But then, as the wagon drivers were pulling out, one of the Talmidim was yelling and screaming. He says, "Wait a minute, wait a minute." He runs up to Rosh Hashiva, who's sitting in the coach, and he says to him, "Rebbe, tell me, I couldn't come up with the answer, but what is the answer? I have to know it." He says, "That's going to be my son-in-law." Yeah, because a person has to really love Torah. He has to be mevakesh Torah. He has to run after Torah as much as he can. And that sense of humility for the sake of Torah is critical. He says here on the top of page 150, if you happen to have the photocopy, that the Chavos Das, who I know him as the Nesivos, but he wrote two great works, he wrote many other great works. His name was Rav Yaakov Milisa. He came from a town called Lisa. And he claims about himself, although it's very hard to believe this, that in his youth, he was like average. He was a Beinoni in Kishrin. He wasn't, you know, you take a look at the report cards they give out today, you know. And, you know, my grandchildren always come home with their reports. They like to show it to me, you know, to Saba. And you take a look on the Kishrin, it says Aleph Plus. Says the Nesivos, I didn't get an Aleph Plus. They say about the Netziv Mivalozhin, a very famous story, that when he was a child, his parents, he overheard his parents crying because they thought he was dumb. They didn't think he had a chance of success. They tried thinking, what should we do with him in life? Maybe he could take care of, I don't know, this, or the, you know, the stables and the horses and so forth and so on. And at that point, the Netziv was broken because he overheard the conversation. And he decided to take upon himself to write the Hamik Shiltas on the Netziv and a bunch of other works. But again, all these stories are hard to believe because the Netziv like knew it all, but what can I tell you? In any event, some say today that, you know, what's more important than Kishron is Hasmada, what they call Shkida, you know, somebody who's dedicated. Then the Torah says that you should place the luchos, ha'edus, into the yarn, and the Torah repeats itself. Why the repetition? So Rashi, in his Perish al Torah, and let me see if I can find it in my Chumash. Okay, good. So I like to see the Rashi in the original, and you should be able to find this in Mirtz Hashem on page 191, I'm hoping. Let's see if I'm right here. Yeah, if you're on page 191, you'll look in the right column all the way on the bottom, two lines before the end of the right side. He says, Lo yadati lama nichpal. Sherei kvar nemar, if you go three psukim earlier, he says, V'nasata el ha'aron es ha'edus. V'yei shloma, Rashi comes up with a brilliant answer. He says, Shebala lamed sheba'odo aron levado. Below kapores, yitain chila es ha'edus l'tocha. After all, the Torah says, bless you, that you have to build, you have to create a kapores around the aron. And the Torah wants to repeat itself to emphasize that you should not put up the kapores until first you've placed the luchos ha'edus inside the aron. The achakach, and only afterwards, then you should put the kaporis on, attach the kaporis to the aron. And Rashi proves his point by looking at a pasuk later on, kishahikim esam mishkan. There it says that when they actually build the mishkan, it says vayitein esayidus el aron, and then it says vayitein esa kaporis. So Rashi is going to teach us that there's a very important principle here, that the kaporis should not be attached to the aron until such time as what? As the luchos ha'edus have been placed into the aron. Now, the difficulty here is obvious. I mean, why would we even dream of putting the kaporis up before the aron is already housing the luchos? In any event, here in this maimar that we're studying today, he quotes three different achronim. That's the Rashash, and the Meshech Chochma of the Rabbi Simcha Mitvinsk, and the Sifsei Tzadik of the Ger Rebbe. They all three came up with the same identical answer to Rashi's question as an alternative, as an alternative shot to Rashi, as to why the Torah had to repeat that you place the luchos, the avos, into the aron, and then only then do you add the kapores on the outside. And in order to appreciate this, we have to see a sugya in Yuma. The Gemara establishes there that there were many, but one most fundamental difference between the first bias and the second is that in the first bias there was an aron, in the second bias there was no aron. Why was there no aron? So the Mishnah establishes that Yoshio HaMelech took the aron and he put it into Gniza, right? They're still looking for the lost ark, those readers, right? And all the other Kalim, even though they were lost, many of the Kalim were lost during the period of Churban Bayis Rishon, nevertheless, they created the Kli Michadosh to replace the Kli that was lost. They did not do so with regard to the aron. And therefore, in Bayis Sheni, there was no aron. So, for example, the Mishnah asks the following question: if there was no aron, then what happened on Yom Kippur during Bayis Sheni? There's a mitzvah of the Kohen Gadol to put the ketores between the two badei ha'aron. And if there was no aron, where did they put the ketores? Where did the Kohen Gadol put the ketores? And the Gemara has a big chiddush there that the Evan Hashasiya could replace the aron, as far as the Avodas HaKetores is concerned. That's a very profound sugya that has to be understood. But what's relevant to us is the question that the Achronim ask. He says, why didn't they replace the aron? If Yoshio HaNavi didn't have an aron, why didn't he simply mandate a replacement aron? And the answer is, says Rashash, that the aron is different than all the other kelim. There's no such possibility of replacing the aron. Why? Because the aron requires the luchos, and the luchos at that point were lost. Once the luchos are lost, the aron is meaningless. And even if you were to replace the aron by reconstructing it and creating a new one, it would not have kedushas ha'aron. It would not have the sanctity of the aron. And how do we know that the aron without the luchos is meaningless? It doesn't have any status, any validity. And that's based on a principle in Kodshim, which is called Shina Olav HaKosav Liakiv, which means that there are many things in Kodshim, in Sefer Vayikra, which are l'chatchila. That's the way it should be done if all things are equal. But b'di'evet, if it wasn't, so you yotze in the carbon is olala. But there's certain cases where even le'ikuva, even b'di'evet, it's completely invalid. How do we know which are which? How do we know when the Torah is requiring something in Kodshim, it's li'kuva? How do we know it's not li'kuva? So the answer is, if the Torah repeats it, that's called l'shina olav hakasuv. The reason why the Torah repeats it is to teach us that it's li'kuva. And that, says the Meshech Chochma and the Rashash, is going to justify why the Torah repeats that you have to place the aron, you have to place the luchos ha'edus into the aron. To teach me that it's absolutely indispensable, that if you don't put the luchos into the aron, you don't have an aron. And that's why at the time of Yeshayahu HaNavi, when they didn't have the luchos, it would be meaningless to replace the aron with a new aron, because again, if there are no luchos, the Torah is saying that it's not an aron. So again, just to summarize, we have two different approaches, two different answers to the question why the Torah repeats placing the edus into the aron. Rashi says, in order to teach us that the seder is crucial, that first we put the luchos edus into the aron, and then and only then do we put the kaporis on the outside of the aron, attach it. And the Rashash and others came up with a different answer, that the Torah repeated placing the luchos into the aron to tell you that the aron without the luchos is not an aron. And that was Nogea for 4 centuries plus during Bayis Sheni. However, the question is, in this whole discussion, can we, because that's our purpose today, derive some sort of a hashkafa, if you will, about Torah based on this concept that the luchos have to be inside the aron? First of all, and that's on a simple level, you could say the following. We spoke at the outset about the statement of Rava that you need that a Talmud Chacham mitocho kimbaro. Well, the Aron looks very beautiful on the outside, right? It was gold-plated. It's a fantastic ornament. But that's not enough. You need the inside. The inside is the lucha. So the Aron is only there and significant because of what's on the inside. It's not, you know, it's not visible to the naked eye. And that's the luchos. The luchos represent the essence, the Torah itself. That's on a simple level, that's for sure true. But perhaps we can go even a step further. And here we have a very famous sugya that appears in two places in Shas, in Kiddushin and Moikot. Now I'm going to present the question to you, and you're going to laugh at me because you all know the answer, but the answer you know is because that's the final conclusion, but it's not a simple conclusion at all. What do I do in a situation where I have a conflict between Torah study and doing a mitzvah? So the Gemara establishes in Kiddusha based on the following logic, the following principle. Gadol Talmud ha-mevi lidei ma'isa. That therefore ma'isa koda, that as far as setting up my priorities, I can't say, well, I'm learning Torah now, and therefore I don't have time, I don't have the opportunity to stop my Torah and fulfill the mitzvah. No, I'm required to terminate my Torah study at this point and to implement the mitzvah. Because the greatness of Torah, of Talmud, is that it brings you to Maisa. However, on the other hand, and that's why I tell you that this conclusion is not so simple logically, is the Gemara says that Talmud Torah keneged kula, which means that if I put all the mitzvahs of the Torah, that's 612 on one half side of the scale, and I put one mitzvah, namely Talmud Torah, on the other scale, then Torah is at least as great as all the other mitzvahs. And it goes even beyond that. The Gemara says, at the end of Megillas Esther, since we're holding already the first week in Adar, let's mention a little bit about Megillas Esther today. The Gemara says that, why does the Pasuk at the end of Megillas say, describe Mordechai as Ratzui L'Rovecha, which is an implicit kind of undercut, you know, he was Ratzui L'Rovecha, you know, like most of the guys liked him, you know, you gotta, if he was running for president, I don't know if he would have gotten the popular vote, but he certainly would have gotten the states. But it's only Rov Echav. You know, why is the Megillah implying a little bit of a stab here, the jab at Mordechai? So the Gemara says that Mordechai, after the story of Purim and Atzolot, somewhere he was dedicating himself to saving Jewish lives. He became the replacement for that other guy. We don't want to mention his name because we got to get our groggers out here. And he was so busy saving Jewish lives, he had no time for Torah study. I don't know, no time, but certainly it cut into his Torah study. And keep in mind that Mordechai, according to Chazal, was a member of the Sanhedrin.
Yeah.
So apparently he lost something of his madrega, the greatest. So the Taz explains in Shulchan Aruch that even though Mordechai was absolutely halachically bound to do what he was, but nevertheless his level went down a little bit. So we have to sort of, I don't know, I got this phrase from Rabbi Morris, he says sort it all out. I don't know, is that a British phrase or a South African phrase? I don't know. But in America we never said that, but now I'm learning how to say it. So we got to sort this all out, because on the one hand it seems that Torah is greater than all the other mitzvahs, but on the other hand the greatness of Torah seems to be that it's subservient. It's a conduit to the other mitzvahs, and it's got to kowtow to the other mitzvahs because Gadol Talmud ha-mevi lidei ma'isa. So how do we balance this all out? So the answer seems to be a principle called kedima. What does that mean? Kedima means priorities. All of halacha is built, I'm exaggerating, but like 99% of halacha is built on conflicts. When you have two great things that are pulling you, each one in their direction, you know, it's like a tug of war. And you must set up a system of priorities, that this comes before this, and that becomes that, before that. That's called Dine Kedima. And Dine Kedima work with their own inherent logic. There are principles that govern Kedima that work through the mechanism of Kedima.
And priorities.
Priorities in time. I mean, just in time, in terms of what do I do first? I can't do both. If I could clone myself, I would fulfill both mitzvahs, but I can't. And then there's another set of considerations, and that's called the inherent significance of the mitzvah. And they don't necessarily parallel each other. There's no mirror image. You can have A is inherently greater than B, but yet A has to give way to B in Hilchas Kedima, and B takes priority over A. And the most beautiful example of this is Avraham Avinu. You remember when he was sitting out, in Kechom Hayom, and it says there that he was being, the Chazal tells us he was being makabel pnei Ashchina, the Shechina came to visit him, to be mevaker chola. And then he sees three guys over there. It's a wonderful opportunity for Achnosis Orachim. But one of the principles that apply to Dine Kedima and priorities is Ha'osek b'mitzvah, potem min ha'mitzvah. So the question is, why did Avraham Avinu, in a sense, drop the mitzvah of Kabbalas Pnei Shechina for the sake of Kabbalas Orachim? Isn't there a rule of Osek b'mitzvah, potem min ha'mitzvah? So the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos that Godol hachnosas orchim yoser mikabolas pnei shechina. What does that mean, Godol? Says the Netziv Mivalajin in his Perish al Torah, the Emek Dovar, he says that in Dine Kedima, hachnosas orchim gets priority over kabolas pnei shechina. Kabbalas Pnei Shechina is an ongoing, continuous mitzvah, whereas Hachnosis Orchim is an urgent mitzvah that requires, it's critical to do it now. If you don't do it now, you'll miss the opportunity. And therefore, a mitzvah Overes takes precedence over a mitzvah She'en Overes. And those are the laws of Kedima, that if a mitzvah is going to pass by immediately, if I lose the opportunity, then that mitzvah trumps another mitzvah, even if that other mitzvah is greater than that mitzvah. So again, Rabbi Osser, what I'm just trying to convey, I don't know if I was clear, is that there are two sets of rules, and it's a chiddush, because you would have said, well, where do we put the priority? Well, that depends on which is a greater mitzvah. If Talmud Torah, for example, is keneged kulam, and if it supersedes all the other mitzvahs in its significance, then for sure I should be learning without stopping for any mitzvah, which would be fascinating. Imagine you're learning the parasha of tzitzis. I'll give you just an example. So I don't have time to put on tzitzis. I'm busy learning the parasha of tzitzis. I mean, that would be the logical conclusion. I could apply that to every single mitzvah in the Torah. But the answer is no. There are dinei kedima. Kedima means, in modern Hebrew, we'd say nichitzut, nachutz. Nachutz means it's urgent, it's pressing. I have to take a break from my mitzvah of Talmud Torah, because the pressing, urgent need of doing a mitzvah. Again, if I could postpone that mitzvah, perhaps if I could send you to be my shliach and represent me and fulfill the mitzvah, that's fine. Then I have a right to continue my learning and an obligation to do so. But if it's a mitzvah that's time urgent and I have no one else to fulfill that mitzvah, then in Dine Kedima, stop my Torah learning, despite the fact that Torah learning is inherently, in and of itself, has a greater chashivus, a greater significance. For example, the Gemara says that all the other mitzvahs will protect you only while you're involved in the mitzvah, but Torah protects you. Or as we said before, Torah is kedusha sagavra, transforms the individual in his sanctity. That puts Torah on a very special level. But nevertheless, we have dinei Kedima, as I said before, and that depends on nechitzut, what's pressing and what's urgent right now. So I think, Rav Osai, what we're able to do is, we're able to sort this all out, I think. And we're going to take a look here at the bottom of page 151, the next to the last paragraph. He quotes the Gemara in Sota. The Gemara in Sota says that if a person doesn't do what he has to do, then he's a chassid shota. The Gemara gives examples. So these guys wearing tefillin, somebody's drowning, he doesn't want to jump in to save them because it'll ruin the tefillin. There's a woman drowning, he doesn't think it's sneers for him to jump in and save her. He says that's called a chassid shota. And what that means is that pikuach nefesh is in Hilchos Kedima and Hilchos Dechia, it takes priority over everything. And that includes even Talmud Torah. So don't tell me you're busy learning, put your head in the Gemara and let somebody drown. That's you can't do that. So you have two people. You have Mordechai, who dedicates himself towards the end of his life, Tatzolos Nefashos. So you have Mordechai at the beginning of his life, who dedicates himself to the study of Torah. And the Gemara is saying that inherently the Hashimus of Torah is greater, but in terms of Kedima, is Pikuach Nefesh is Dochen, and therefore that's what he had to do. But why Hashem put him in that situation, that's a more profound philosophical question, metaphysical question. But at the end of the day, since he had to dedicate himself to Hatzolos Nefashos, which is a great mitzvah, and it's up there towards the top, and in Kedima it is on the top, but nevertheless, in terms of its inherent Hashivus, in terms of what it does to the person, it's not as great as the study of Torah.
So if he had to do that, why does it say Rove? Why is it...
Rove means that he was no longer a member of the Sanhedrin. He was actually taken off the Sanhedrin.
He was obliged to do that.
Correct, but he didn't have the ability to dedicate himself to Torah study. His level went down. That's a reality. You see, your personal level is a reflection of the inherent significance and the chshimus of the mitzvah. What you have to do befall, because God put you in that situation, is give up on that chashimus for the sake of dechia, as we said, because nefesh is docha, for the sake of kedima. You can have, for example, the following situation. Reuven, if he studies Torah on his own, will achieve great heights. He'll plummet the depths of the Torah. But there are 1,000 people out there that need Reuven to teach them Torah. I'm just exaggerating. It could be 2 people. It doesn't have to be 1,000. And what Reuven is going to have to do, and this is a famous tshuva of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein about how every yeshiva bach has to dedicate X amount of time in his day to give to study with a younger chavrusa, even though it's going to lower his level. You have to teach Torah. And sometimes you have to give up and forego on your own personal level for the sake of another mitzvah. The Gemara tells us in the Yerushalmi a story about Rabbi Avo. He sent his son, Rabbi Hanina, to study Torah in Kesari, in Caesarea, I guess you'd call it today. And what he found out when the word came back is that his son had volunteered for the Chevra Kadisha. He was busy out there in the cemetery burying the dead. So the father, Rabbi Avo, sends a message to his son, Abli Aim Kvar Metzlenu. Yeah, there aren't the, I could have appointed you locally to the Chevra Kadish. I sent you to Caesarea to get involved in the Mason. In other words, the father of Yavo was upset with his son Rabbi Hanina because you should be Osek Bilima Torah and you're dropping it for the sake of Halvayas Ames, a great mitzvah Halvayas Ames, but Torah is even greater. No, but you'll ask me the question, so why was he mocking on him? After all, if there was a Levaya, and his son, Rabbi Hanina, was there, and he was the man on the spot to help prepare the Levaya, certainly he would have to stop his Torah. But the answer is, I didn't send you there for that purpose. There are other people who could do that mitzvah. I want you to achieve the greatest mitzvah in the world, the most chashuv mitzvah, the mitzvah that could have the most profound impact on you and study Torah. I didn't send you to Caesarea for any other purpose. Okay, now we go on to page 152. And he says the following. There's a sefer. Again, Rabosa, we still want to come back to the idea of why the Torah repeats itself, that the Luchos Ha'Avos have to be placed into the Ark. So there's a sefer called the Das Moshe. I'm not familiar with it. Rabbi Moshe Goldberg. I have a friend, Rabbi Moshe Goldberg. I don't know the author of this book. I guess there are a lot of Rabbi Moshe Goldbergs around. And he was medayik in the Rambam. Okay, let's say I'm going to read to you the Rambam without looking inside. You tell me which 2 words in the Rambam are superfluous. Okay, because you know the Rambam has no superfluous words. So the Rambam writes the following: Ein lecha mitzvah bechol ha-mitzvos kulon shehi shkula keneged Talmud Torah. El Talmud Torah keneged kol ha-mitzvos kula. Okay. The Rambam writes a Talmud ha-yil fanav asiyas mitzvah. Okay. V'Talmud Torah. So what does he do? He's in this conflict situation. He says to Rambam, listen carefully, see if you can catch the two extra words. Im efshal mitzvah le'yosos sal yidei ha'cherim, lo yafsik talmudo, if someone else can do the mitzvah, he should not terminate his learning. But v'im lav, it's a double negative, meaning in this case he has no one else to do the mitzvah, it's only him. Yasa mitzvah v'yachsel talmudo.
Last two words.
Yeah, v'yachsel talmudo. So I wrote a whole article on this, but anyway, we'll see what he has to say. The Rambam didn't have to tell me that Yachzor l'Talmudo. Says Rav Moshe Goldberg, that what did the Rambam want to emphasize? The Rambam wanted to teach us that although in Hilchas Dechiyah and Kedima, now Gemilas Chasodim, for example, or any other mitzvah comes first, and it becomes, you know, on the priority list, it takes priority. But nevertheless, on the hierarchy of Chashivus, Talmud Torah is on the top. And therefore, a person should remember that even though he has to take a break from his Torah study for the sake of a mitzvah, whatever that mitzvah might be, nevertheless, he has to do his maximum effort to make sure that as soon as he finishes, he completes that mitzvah, he gets back without wasting any other moments of his time to the Torah, to the Talmud, to the study of Talmud. So that's why the Rambam emphasizes v'yachzor l'talmudo, to emphasize here that, you know, for practical reasons, he's got to stop his Torah study in order to implement another mitzvah. That's called Hilchas Kedima, Hilchas Dechia. But really, he shouldn't dilly-dally. He's got to remember that the chashivas of the mitzvah, in terms of the hierarchy of significance, is Torah's on the top. So as soon as he gets an opportune moment, he goes back to study the Torah. That's the Das Moshe. However, there may be a whole other way of understanding why the Rambam emphasizes v'yachzor l'talmud. And that's based on the Maral Miprag. This you'll see on the bottom of the page. The Maral quotes a very famous Medrash. The Medrash says that why is it that the two sides of the tabernacles of the Luchos HaBris were exactly the same in size and so forth? The answer is that the similarity, the exact similarity, is meant to convey a very fundamental message. The two sides of the Luchos were made up of one, respectively, one is Bein Adam Lemakom, that's on the right side, and on the left side was Bein Adam Lechaver. And lest one make the mistake, which is a common error, that Bein Adam Lemakom is that much greater then Bein Adam L'Chaver, put Bein Adam L'Chaver as a secondary kind of set of mitzvahs, the Torah wanted to put them equally on both sides of two equal tabernacles in order to teach us that the mitzvahs Bein Adam L'Chaver do not fall shy in their significance to mitzvahs Bein Adam L'Makom. Is that clear? That's the Maral, crystal clear. The Maral then goes a step further. And he says that you can classify mitzvos bein adam lechavero, interpersonal mitzvos, as mitzvos masios, which means they always require some sort of an action. Correct? Whereas bein adam lemakom, not necessarily. There's something called dvekus, and there's ava, and there's yira, there are many dimensions of bein adam lemakom that are not action mitzvos. And the aron is a symbol of Bein Adam L'Makom, whereas the Kruvim, which were put on the outside of the Aron, that look like two babes, right? They represent the Bein Adam L'Chavero. So the Aron, in a sense, together with its Kruvim, parallels the Luchos. It has both elements to it. And maybe that would justify why the Torah had to emphasize, not once but twice, that El Ha'aron Titein Esaedus. Now again, as we said before, if you look in the Chumash, in this repetition, there's something wedged right in the middle. And that is, V'asisa Kapores. You have to build a Kapores. And V'asisa Shnayim Kruvim. Now, why is the Torah telling you Luchos, Kruvim, and then again Luchos? Do you follow? The Kruvim are sandwiched in between twice the Torah telling me to put the Luchos in the Aron. And he wants to suggest the following. That the first set of luchos, I mean, not the first set, I shouldn't say that, that was a mistake. I mean, the first time the Torah mandates putting the luchos into the Aron, that's representative of studying Torah. Good. The man is studying Torah. Then it says, V'yasisa shnayim kruvim. Hold on a second. It's very nice and wonderful. It's fine and dandy that you're studying Torah. But the kruvim representing the mitzvos masios and the beinonim l'chavero, they require that you terminate the involvement, the dedication to the luchos. Put your Talmud Torah on the back burners. Ah! But now the Torah wants to tell us, again, put the aron back. You finished with the mitzvos masios. You completed your task of beinonim l'chavero, that's the kruvim. Now again, immediately, put the luchos back inside the aron, meaning, again, reassume your study of Torah. And that's what the Rambam means by saying, v'yachso lilimudo. So actually, it's not that much different from the Das Moshe, when you think about it. But the illustration to demonstrate that v'yachso lilimudo means that primarily you're always involved in the study of Torah. You may have to take a temporary break in order to implement the mitzvahs masios because of the laws of Kedima, but nevertheless, never losing sight, you know, the forest for the trees, as they say, meaning the fact that priority really, and the most important chashivus is in Talmud Torah. So the Torah says, after you sort of stopped your learning of the Aron, and you involved yourself in the kruvim of mitzvahs masios, now immediately you finish with that, get back on the horse, the yachso le Talmudo, and get involved in the study of Torah once again. And finally, on the last page, page 153, we talk about the badim of the Aron. Remember we said that with regard to the badim, we have a principle the Torah formulates of lo yasur, that there should not be any removal of the badim that are meant to be used to help transport the Aron. Okay. And he says the following. We can, in a sense, divide up the community of Israel in an extreme way. Obviously, there are many gradations in between. But if you want to talk about polar extremes, you have one group of individuals that comprise a segment of Klal Yisrael that are Shakua Belimator, Yom HaMolad. That's it. They're like this grocery store next door. You know, 24/7. Except they take a break on Shabbos. And we do most of our work on Shabbos. They don't give the rabbis Shabbos off. That's why after week after week after week, you finally have to take a little break. Anyway, so those are the first, that's the first category. That category of people are Yechidei school. Those are the select few people that have, you know, been blessed with the opportunity of dedicating themselves full time to Torah study. And then you've got the bulk of the community, right? They fit into the category called Ehoves HaMalacha. They have to dedicate themselves to a parnasa, to work, Adamli Amel Yulav, Shlomo Mel says. And therefore, even though they don't have the opportunity to dedicate themselves full-time to Torah study, nevertheless, Chayev Adam L'Kvol Ozman Min Hayom V'Layel L'Talmud Torah, every member of the Jewish community, every single member, have to dedicate some time during the daylight hours, during the nighttime hours, both in a 24, to the study of Torah. And the Gemara in Chulin has a very interesting comparison in describing the relationship between these two groups of people, these two groups of Jews that have to work somehow together as one organism. And the Gemara says that you cannot have fruits growing on a tree without leaves. The leaves protect the tree and allow the tree to produce its fruit. And he says the following, based on the Gemara in Chuli, that there are those who are called Tomchei Torah. Those are the ones who support Torah. They may be involved in Melacha, but they use their resources to help maintain the study of Torah on behalf of those Yechidei Skula who are Shakua B'Limud Torah Yom V'Layla. So we have two symbolisms here. We got the Peros, that's the ultimate, as we said, that's on the top. That's the Mitzad Chashivas HaMitzvah, the greatest, but yet the Peros cannot exist on a tree without the leaves. You'll have to ask a botanist to see if this is true, but that's his premise here. And he says the following, that the Tomchei HaTorah are absolutely crucial in order to produce the peros of the Lomdei Torah. And by parallel, we have the same idea with regard to the Aram. The Torah goes out of its way to tell us, and this is Pasuk Tezvav over here, that the Tabos HaOran Yu Abadim Lo Yasur Mimenu, that you need these Tabos. The Tabos, he says, represent the Tomchei HaTorah. They're going to support the Aron. The Aron itself represents the Torah. And therefore, the Torah goes out of its way to say that the Badim always have to be there. And this is going to teach us perhaps two different lessons, you know, in two different directions. What does it mean, Lo Yasur Mimenu, which by the way is one of the lavim that's counted in the Torah mitzvahs? The answer is this very deep, profound idea that there's a reality that has, that's comprised of two different elements. There's the tomech and the nitmach. You know, the tomech is the leaves that facilitate the peros, and the peros that can only exist because of the tomech, because of the support of the leaves. And he says the following, that the same thing applies to the study of Torah. And in order to demonstrate this, he refers to the famous parsha in Tanakh. You remember when the Plishtim took the Aron captive, and finally the Aron was freed and returned to Klal Yisrael. So on the way back, the Aron was taken from a place called Beis Avinadav, and when it was brought up towards Yerushalayim, that's the famous story where, you know, David goes completely dancing, wild, dancing. Michal was so happy about it. But anyway, so what happens over there is a Talmud of David HaMelech by the name of Uzzah. And it's a very sad story. Uzzah is a great Talmud Chacham, but he actually dies in the process of bringing the Aron back to Yerushalayim. Why? So the Navi describes that the Aron was Nishmat Mehagol, in other words, the Aron was being transported on a wagon, and the Aron on its way up, because, you know, Yerushalayim is an Aliyah, started falling back, right? And it was about to fall out of the wagon. So this guy Uzzah, who's again quite a outstanding young scholar, he pushes himself into the Aron in order to catch the Aron to make sure it doesn't fall. And the Gemara says that various opinions in Chazal as to was he allowed to touch the Aron directly without any chatzitz on his hands, but then even he was trying to desperately save the Aron from falling. And on that, the Pasuk says, Vayichar af Hashem bi'Uzzah, and he dies. Well, why all the anger? So the Gemara in Masechta Sota explains that Uzzah demonstrated a subtle lack of emunah. Now, let me explain. You know, the rule of punishments is something that defies our human comprehension, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is medagdikim et tzadikim kichut hasara, which means that punishments are relative. You know, what would be considered a crime for a holy person on a very high level and worthy of punishment would not be considered a criminal act for someone who's not on that level. In the case of Uzzah, who was considered an outstanding Torah scholar, he should have realized, again, you and I would have trouble, you know, at least I don't want to project, you guys might be on the level, but I would not be able to, you know, naturally speak, you see the Aron's falling, you almost, it's almost like a knee-jerk response.
Reflex,
you
know, yeah.
A reflex response. You jump to save the Aron. But Uzzah, on his level, again, it's only a chet for Uzzah, so don't misunderstand here. But Uzzah, on his level of faith, should have understood that it's impossible for the Aron to fall. Why is it impossible for the Aron to fall? So the Gemara tells us that Ha'aron Hayenose Es Nosov. You remember this?
Yeah.
That the Aron would carry things that were attached. So there's a Kal V'chomer here. If the Aron could attach the people who were trying to lift up the Aron, and it could lift them up, then Kol Shekein, how much more so would it lift itself up? And therefore, there's no question about it that in the metaphysics or the supernatural realm of the Aron, there was no possibility that the Aron would have fallen. So at that moment when Uzzah lunged to protect the Aron from falling, he indicated a certain subtle, of subtle, shabbat, subtle, shabbat, subtle, dak, shabbat, dak, lack of emunah and therefore he was punished so severely. What does this mean to us? That the universe, and with this we'll conclude, the universe is controlled or guided in two different realms, or two different levels. One is what we call Ness, and one is what we call Teva, but really it's not Teva, it's Ness. But everything is miracles, but some are open miracles, obviously blatant, and some are concealed. Those are called nature. Oh. He says on the one hand, man is given freedom of choice in the natural world. That's, he has to operate within the natural world of cause and effect, of the way the biology works. And in that sense, the Aron, we were commanded to build the Aron. It's got to be made from physical, you know, material gold. It's got to be made with the Tabaos and the Badim. There have to be people who will lift up the Aron and carry it. All this is given to man as part of the world of Teva, in which man has to function and fulfill his mandate according to the natural law of the universe. But at the same time, man in his mind, in his spirit, has to belong and be constantly connected to a concealed world. A world which cannot be seen by the physical eyesight of Basar V'Dam. And that's the world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way God rules the universe. His sovereign control, which is metaphysical, which is supernatural. The Aron, even though it operates on a physical level, begolui, you know, as we see it, and has to be carried, but nevertheless, even though you look at it, you take a picture, you think that the people underneath the Aron are carrying the Aron. No, it's really the Aron, if you had that eyesight, that penetrating vision, that's carrying and lifting the people. And that's where Uzzah messed up a little bit. You know, he was missing, in a sense, the emphasis on that, or living in that world of nefesh, of ruchnius, of looking below the surface. In any event, coming back to the Badim, as we said, Lo Yasur Mimenu, and the Badim represent the Tomchei HaTorah, when we receive Torah, they're the Talmidei Chachamim, they're the Tomchim, the two groups that we spoke about that work in cahoots, one with the other, then on a material, physical level, in the Olam HaTeva, it would seem that the Tomchei Torah are actually carrying the Talmidei Chachamim. That's only as we view things on the revealed level externally. However, if we have a deeper vision, and we can see below the surface into the world, penetrating into the world of the metaphysics, then he says, it's not just that the Tomchim are facilitating the Lomdei Torah, so that the Lomdei Torah could continue to exist and dedicate themselves to learning. But even more than that, the Aron conveys the symbolic message that in truth, it's the Torah, the Aron representing the Torah, the Talmidei Chachamim, who are really carrying those who are carrying the Torah. In other words, the Tomchei Talmidei Chachamim in the plane of nature are facilitating the ability for the Lomdei Torah to dedicate themselves to Torah, and that's true. That's one level of truth. But the deeper level of truth is that the Nitmachim are the Tomchim, meaning those who are carrying the Aron, those who are supporting the Talmidei Chachamim, they in truth are the Nitmachim. They are being supported by the Talmidei Chachamim. That's in the Mishar Nativ'i, the Mishar Ruchani. So let's just quickly summarize the various lessons that we derive from the analogy between the Aron and the Torah. Number one, this is a mitzvah of building the Aron, creating the Aron, that's incumbent upon the entire Klal Yisrael. Everyone has a shot at Torah. Number two, we spoke about the fact that the Torah repeats itself, that the meaning, the significance of the Aron is only because of the luchos that's within, and that's called tocho kebaro, that a Talmid Chacham is great insofar as his outside is a manifestation of his true, genuine inside, and if we penetrate into his nefesh, we will perceive that he is totally honest and genuine about his dedication to Torah. Number three, we spoke about the fact that the luchos have to be there in order to make the Aron into something meaningful. Sometimes we have to take a break from the Luchos for the sake of the Kruvim, which represent the Mitzvos Masios, because in Hilchos Kedima, Mitzvos Masios take precedence, but it's got to be V'yachsa L'limudo. And finally, the concept of Lo Yasuri Men with regard to the Badim, that connection, that interconnection between the Tomchim and the Nitmachim has to be constant, continuous, without any separation. Each one in respective worlds is carrying and facilitating the other. Okay, then, if any questions, we can ask them. And that's what we wanted to cover for today. For Parshas.